We take you now on an exciting tour of an industry that forges parts out of hot metal to make them safer and more dependable for airplanes, autos, machines, and tools. Down through the ages, when something made of metal had to stand shock and strain and take hard punishment, it was always forged. This is the story of how forged parts are made.
There was a time when the ring of the anvil was a familiar sound in every town and village. But that was a long time ago. So long, in fact, that some might think the blacksmith's craft is one of the lost arts and belongs to the days of our grandfathers. Actually, this is far from true. Although the art of forging is as old as history itself, its practices have been transformed to fit our modern needs. Today's forge is a modern oil or gas burning furnace where billets of special quality steel are brought to forging heat. The blacksmith's hammer has grown to a powerful machine that multiplies the strength of his muscles 1,000-fold. His crude anvil now appears as a carefully made die that shapes the hot metal with swift precision. Thus, the skill of the smith, as important now as it ever was, has been aided and abetted by many other skills, so that now we can forge the metal faster, reproduce the desired contours exactly, and as many times as may be needed. A fundamental fact about forging is the quality improvement that hot working imparts to the metal. This is a natural consequence of the forging process itself, which allows the original grain flow of the metal to conform to the contours of the finished piece. It works in our favor equally well whether the forging blow is struck by the hand hammer of the blacksmith or a 1,000-pound bore drop hammer or a 50,000-pound steam-driven giant. But huge forgings like this are the exception, not the rule. To learn what forgings really mean to us in our daily lives, let's take an example we all know about. For instance, the family car. It's a convenience we all take for granted, and one we'd have a tough time getting along without. It takes a lot of forgings to build a car. Normally, of course, they're concealed beneath a handsome exterior. But if we just dissolve that exterior away, leaving only the vital chassis, then we can take a really good look at its works. Let's start with the engine, whose component parts are made of many materials and by many processes. The cylinder block and manifolds are cast iron. In the distributor, we find a shaft that is machined to size and shape from solid bar stock. Fan blades are stamped from sheet steel, and so are cylinder head covers. Valve rocker arms are steel forgings, and so are many of the vital parts that transmit the engine's power. Connecting rods, crankshaft, and transmission gears. Universal joint yokes and crosses, and differential gears and pinions. And in the chassis, the steering knuckle, arm, and kingpins are all forgings. Our car is thus a beautifully integrated whole, built up from many kinds of parts, each suited to its particular kind of service. Where maximum strength and toughness are essential, these parts are forgings, because forging develops the utmost quality in the metal through refining and controlling its grain structure. A connecting rod is a first-class example of this. Here is the die in which the rod is made. Its two matching halves contain the impressions that correspond to the shape of the rod. In use, the dies are mounted in a drop forging hammer, the lower half fixed, while the upper half is fastened to the ram, which can fall freely to bring the two matching halves together. The connecting rod starts as a steel blank of the proper size, called in the trade a multiple, which is heated in the furnace until the steel becomes somewhat plastic and will flow under the blows of the hammer. Here's what the rod looks like after trimming and cleaning. This one has been cut in two and the exposed surface polished, then etched with acid. This reveals how the grain structure conforms to the shape of the piece, concentrating the grain density and fiber formation at the points of greatest stress. Most forgings are made in drop hammers. One widely used type is the bored drop hammer. It gets its name from the hard maple boards that are attached to the ram. At the top of the frame, they pass between, but do not quite touch continuously running rollers. Whenever the ram has fallen to deliver a blow to the work, the rollers automatically press against the boards and drive them upward, carrying the ram up to its top position. Then the boards are caught and held by wedge action until the hammer man releases them for the next blow. This cycle will repeat itself automatically as long as the treadle is held down. This hammer is rated at 2,500 pounds, that being the weight of the ram. Board hammers run up to about 7,500 pounds and make forgings up to about 30 pounds. Another kind of gravity drop hammer is the airlift hammer. Instead of boards to raise the ram, an air cylinder and piston do the work. Operating the treadle lets the ram fall freely of its own weight. An important feature of the airlift is that the hammer man can control the length of stroke, varying the blow from light to heavy. This is a steam drop hammer. They are usually built bigger and heavier than gravity hammers, run in falling weight up to 50,000 pounds, and use a double-acting steam cylinder to raise the ram and to drive it downward so that the force of the blow is greatly increased. The ram is automatically kept moving up and down between working strokes in order to prevent condensation of steam in the cylinder and valves. By varying the steam pressure, the hammer man can deliver a light or heavy blow as required. Steel multiple usually has some surface scale as a result of heating, and this is removed by an air jet or steam nozzle. Steam hammers using closed dies produce drop forgings weighing up to several tons. You have probably noticed how the hammer man uses different cavities in the die as the work progresses. The most important reason for this is that full development of proper grain flow in the metal requires progressive forging steps. To show how this works out, here's a typical die, its two halves laid out so we can study these steps. And here we have a number of partly finished forgings to show what each step does. This is the fullering impression and is the first one used. Holding the multiple in this position reduces the section of the metal for the shank of the rod. The edging impression is next. It is used to gather the stock where it will be needed for the larger sections, such as the big boss on the crank end. In blocking, the next step, several blows form the hot metal into approximately its final shape. The final operation is done in the finishing impression. Now all details of the final shape appear, the maximum improvement in the quality of the metal has been achieved, and the piece is ready for trimming. Here is a set of trimmer dies consisting of the die and the punch. When set up in a press, it will shear the flash off cleanly, leaving a finished forging of the exact shape required, needing only a bare minimum of machining before assembly. Some forgings are made in another type of equipment, called a forging machine or upsetter, of which this is an example. In upset forging, the hot metal is worked not by hammer blows, but by applying squeeze pressure to the heated portion of a bar of stock, displacing the metal and forcing it to fill a cavity in the die. The die itself is made in two halves, which open to admit the stock and close to grip it tightly on each work stroke of the machine. The finished forging appears on the end of the bar of stock and needs only to be cut off, a job usually done with speed and accuracy by a fast-cutting hot saw. Looking down into the machine from above, we can see that the actual displacing of the metal is done by a ram or header that moves into the die cavity on each work stroke. These wooden models show how the header operates, moving into the cavity from the rear of the machine. This is called a three-pass die, with three cavities and three headers, corresponding to three progressive stages in forming the metal to its final shape. The first two headers are hollow. Removing a portion of one will let us see just how it works. The blank is merely a bar of forging steel heated to working temperature. It is inserted in the die cavity, which then closes around it, gripping the bar tightly at this point. Now let's look inside the die and see what happens when the heading tool is brought into position. Pressing on the end of the bar with great force, it shortens and expands it to fill the hollow in the header, then withdraws. Now the piece is transferred to the second cavity and the ram moves in again. This further shortens and expands the piece. Now it is ready for the finishing cavity, or the final pass. This time, the header, a solid bar, expands the stock to the full diameter of the finishing cavity. When it withdraws, the completed forging may be removed from the die. To make larger or more complex parts, dies with more cavities and headers are used. This one, with four passes, produced this forged blank for a gear shift countershaft. This gear cluster forging was made in a similar set of dies. Cutting it at two and etching with acid shows the control of grain structure and fiber formation achieved by upset forging, which results in a finished part of maximum strength and durability. Another means of forging by the use of squeeze pressure is the mechanical press. Presses like this are capable of exerting up to several thousand tons of pressure on the hot metal. This press is making shell casing bases. The simple round shape is very well adapted to high-speed press production. Only one die cavity is needed for this forging, although two strokes of the press are required. The first one upsets the metal blank, breaks the scale, and partly positions the grain flow. On the second stroke, the upset blank is forced into the die impression, which gives it its final form and finish. For large forgings of aluminum or magnesium, a hydraulic press is often used. This one is capable of exerting 18,000 tons of pressure, and even larger ones are being built. Here we see aluminum alloy being worked into an impeller wheel for a jet engine. Right now, a billet of the alloy, heated to forging temperature, is being pre-worked between flat dies to improve its grain structure. Next comes the first pressing or blocking that brings the billet roughly to shape. Then, in a second die, the finishing strokes give the forging its final form. As in any other kind of closed die forging, the hot plastic metal is forced to flow step by step into the contours of the finished piece, with its grain structure developed and improved at each step. In addition to hammers and presses, auxiliary forging equipment is often used. For example, forging rolls reduce a short, thick section to a long, thin one, or modify the cross-section of the stock prior to forging. In this case, partly finished forgings are being elongated and tapered to make tractor gear shift levers. Some preparatory forging is done with plain flat dies. The method is called Smith forging and is here being used to make a tongue hold on this billet to prepare it for a closed die hammer. This is a trip hammer or helve hammer, another type of auxiliary equipment. A typical use is drawing out and tapering large stock preparatory to finish forging in a closed die, thus making for a simpler die in the drop hammer. This, like all other auxiliary equipment, is one more means of utilizing closed dies to the best advantage. Because it's the closed die and all the technology that goes with it that combines the benefits of mass production with the fine quality of forged metal. So the die itself is the focal point of the whole process, and the making of the dies a vital part of any forging plant. Die blocks are made from special alloy steel, forged to the dimensions needed for each die to be made, and heat-treated to assure maximum hardness and die wear. The face of each die block is dressed in a surface grinder. This will result in a smooth, accurate surface upon which to do the layout work. Now the die maker has begun the layout work, the outlining of the die impression on the face of the block. When this is completed, the impressions are sunk into the die, beginning with the finishing impression that gives the forging its final size and shape. It is located near the center of the die, so the weight of the falling ram will be centered on the forging. When the completed forging dies are finally installed in the hammer and lined up carefully for exact registration of the two halves, then the painstaking work that went into the planning, making, and checking of the dies gives assurance that they'll do their work perfectly from the first forging on. To make the enormous number of forgings in use today requires a vast variety of high-grade steels. Each different alloy, designated by color code and SAE alloy number, has been specified to meet the requirements of a particular forging application. To make certain the requirements will be met, samples of every lot are marked out for analysis by the Forging Quality Control Laboratory. Careful chemical analysis double-checks the composition of the alloy. Physical properties are determined by hardenability and other mechanical tests. Microscopic analysis will reveal grain size and crystalline structure, which have a lot to do with the behavior of the steel. If a particular lot of steel gets the nod from the metallurgist, it is okay to cut up into multiples according to the size and weight of the forging to be made. This is done by shearing the bars, either hot or cold, or sawing them when the bars are too big to shear or when squared ends are needed. Forging multiples cover a tremendous range in size and weight. This little blank weighs about an ounce and will be forged into a carburetor link that weighs even less. On the other hand, this massive multiple, weighing well over a ton and requiring a crane to handle it, will be hammered into a landing gear, cylinder, and strut for a big airplane. Nothing could be simpler in form than the multiples from which forgings are made. Yet from these elementary shapes, a few swift blows of the hammer can produce an almost infinite variety of useful forms, each with all the strength, toughness, and durability that is inherent in the process of forging hot steel. Over 600,000 different forgings are being made today, and the number is constantly growing. Let's have a look at how some of the more interesting of these are made. An automobile crankshaft is certainly interesting enough to start with. Here's the finished crankshaft forging alongside the billet from which it was made. This is a crankshaft forging unit consisting of two steam hammers and their auxiliary equipment. The hammer nearest us is the first one used and does the preliminary forging. Its die carries the rolling impression and the first and second blocking impressions. In the second hammer, the die has only one impression. Thus, the power of the hammer is concentrated on the forging during the finishing blows. The trimmer press is located near the finishing hammer, and the crankshaft is trimmed hot. The flash remains on top of the die while the forging falls through. Tools for the dentist and surgeon are a far cry from the heavy crankshaft, but the inherent strength and toughness of forged steel are as important to one as to the other. These forceps are made from two similar forgings assembled together. They start as a bar of special alloy of stainless steel, and in a very short space of time, the hammer has forged another pair of forceps. Small parts can often be produced economically by forging more than one from the same multiple. This die has three identical cavities and makes three parts at once from each bar of stock. The group of forgings, together with their common flash, is called a platter. One stroke of the trimmer punch suffices to free all the forgings from the flash at once. Now let's look in on a really heavy forging job. This billet of special alloy steel is about to be forged into a part of a catapult for launching jet planes from an aircraft carrier. This is, or will be, a sizable forging weighing some 1,300 pounds. Its unusual shape calls for a die with a cavity 12 feet long. The top half of the die weighs 14 tons. The ram weighs 20. A total of 68,000 pounds of falling weight with the added force of a full head of steam behind it. That will give you some idea of the size range of forgings. But even in a whopper like this one, the same principles of development of proper grain flow, of improving the metal quality, still hold. One of the most interesting and spectacular uses of forgings is in the modern turbojet airplane engine. Here's how such an engine begins. This block of steel is about to be forged into one of the compressor wheels. The stainless steel alloy used is very tough and resistant to deformation, even when hot, and calls for one of the biggest of the steam hammers. After being finished forged in another hammer, this is what the wheel forging looks like. Here the blades for the engine are being finished forged. This is one of the forged blades after trimming. Here's how it looks after the finishing work is done. And here's how it fits into the wheel. Of course, there's a great deal more than forgings in a turbojet engine. But just as we have found in other fields, where conditions are most severe, where stresses are the highest, where human life depends on reliability, there you're most likely to find forgings in use. As the pilot starts his engine, runs it up and takes off, the sound and fury of the jets can speak louder than any words for the ability of forgings to do the tough jobs well, and for the contribution they make, not only to our standards of living, but to our very safety as a nation.